Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, August 27th, 2015. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
Now, I'm going to say right up front, you know, last week we ended up doing essentially the whole show on the election. Well, me being sick and the election. And, you know, we skipped our lightning round. So we are going to do an all lightning round show today. We're not going to be strict about like 2 minutes per topic or anything like that.
Right.
But we just have a whole big list of topics. Yvonne and I will alternate like choosing what to talk about, and we'll talk about it for a few minutes and see where it goes. And,
yeah.
You know, that's the plan. And so we might as well just start. So right as we were starting to record, Yvonne was starting to tell me about,
Sam has complained about squeaking from my chair on the show. A few of you may have noticed this as the show's going along. And I was explaining to Sam, I have a chair that I bought a very long time ago. Cost a whole bunch of money. Way too much money, to be honest with you, for what the hell the damn chair is. I don't know why the hell I bought the stupid thing. But anyway, bottom line is that the damn chair won't stay straight. So anyway, I don't know. I was just telling him, like,
you're shopping.
Yeah, I was looking at chairs. Now, here's the thing. You know, so I was saying that I saw these Aeron chairs, which is I have an Aeron chair at my office, a very nice chair. And we were talking about how expensive they were. And I was looking at some at $500. And I'm like, geez, that's cheaper than we thought. Well, they're used. Well, look, if you think about how many companies have gone like belly up the last like 15 years, you know,
bunch of those chairs.
Oh my God. You know, you think about, you know, I remember like going to almost seeing pictures of almost every fucking .com that started in the early 2000s. I mean, this chair has been around for 15 years. I mean, I had one like, I mean, I remember I ordered one when I was working at HP like in 2000 or something, 99 actually, to be precise. I ordered one. I remember that my boss saw it and was like, oh shit, can you order a few more? Sure. Here we go. Let's just bring a whole bunch. They started getting them in. But every fucking tech company you would see like in a .com era had one of these. So I'm sure there's got to be a massive inventory glut out there of somebody just – this is what I was seeing. These guys were buying them and refurbishing them, you know, just selling more Aeron chairs, you know. So I don't know. I really don't want to spend money on a chair. Can I be honest? So anyway,
I was looking. One of the things that I like – I am a big fan of the website called The Wire Cutter. That if you're not familiar with it, if our listeners aren't familiar with it, it's like a tech gadget thing site. But instead of just always doing reviews of the latest and greatest, for each category of thing, they always have an article that they just keep updating that says, what is the best thing in this category right now?
Okay.
And so they've got a section on office chairs.
And?
First of all, they've got a big weight on it. They're apparently in the process of researching their new chairs for 2015 right now.
Uh-huh.
But their previous recommendation, their number one choice was the Steelcase Leap chair.
Steelcase Leap.
Which is apparently around $920.
Okay.
But their budget chair. So their budget chair, let's see, here we go. The Leap, blah, 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 blah. They give.
Fuck, I see some used for $299.99.
They give the, they're also great, but too expensive choice is the Embody chair from Herman Miller, which is apparently like, I don't know, it's the new Aeron or something, for $1,450. So $1,500 for that.
Oh, shit.
They give an another Herman Miller Mira chair. They give another one that they say is too squishy. Their best cheap chair, their best $200 chair is the one I'm in right now, which is the Marcus from IKEA, which costs about $200.
I thought you said spent less than that for it.
Yeah, I was probably, it was a birthday present, so I was guessing.
Okay.
But they say it's, they give that as a just okay, but they say it's the best thing you can get for $200.
Well, okay, so you made a wise, so whoever bought it for you made a wise choice.
Yeah, I mean, I had it on my wish list, so it wasn't
okay. Well, that made it even easier. So I don't know.
And I have been quite happy with my IKEA Marcus, but you'd mentioned that you'd actually had back issues in the past from crappy chairs, and I've never had that kind of thing.
Oh my God! I mean, I remember the whole reason why I got an Aeron chair in the first place. So I started working at HP after like about 3 or 4 months. I discovered this when I was before I worked in the tech industry, I had a travel agency. Okay, all right, it's my family's that I ran. And for the first little time, I used some shitty chair, and I wound up in incredible pain. And then I saw which chairs we had, and I grabbed this very – my father had bought some very nice office chairs that were ergonomic, and I started sitting on that one, and my back pain went away. And from that moment, I realized, oh crap! I mean, Jesus, it makes such a difference. So I started working at HP, and wound up with the same thing. Couple of months working on some shitty chair, my back was killing me. I went to the office manager, and I said, listen, I'm gonna wind up suing you guys for my back. So what do we do? Said, listen, go to Herman Miller, pick whatever you want. And I'm like, fine. So they gave me sent a PO over there. Just told me go over there, pick whatever you want. I got the Herman Miller. I saw the Aeron. I tried it. I said, I love this thing. You know, I'm like, okay. So they're like, perfect. We'll ship one to you. That's it. There you go. And that's how I got that chair. So. I don't know. I honestly find it incredibly comfortable. I will say this. Look, if you haven't sat in the Aeron chair, the great thing about it is the fact that unlike the ones that have cushions, because it's a perforated bottom, okay, mm-hmm. It lets the air through. You don't get sweaty or like hot or anything in the chair. And that is like the nice thing about it. It's just – it's comfortable. The material is comfortable like a cushion, but yet at the same time – You don't get the whatchamacallit, you don't get hot or stuff or whatever in the chair. So it's really nice. I just configured one to see how much it would cost. I'm like, I'm not buying one. It's $1,055. They can custom make one for me and ship it to me at home.
There you go. Yeah, now I have a hard time. Like there's as above a certain point, you get diminishing returns. And I grant you that maybe the $1,200, $1,300 chair is awesome, but is it really like $1,000 more awesome than the $200 chair?
Okay, let me put it to you this way. I work from home a lot. I mean, I spend this stupid chair like probably about, what, at least 30 hours a week? Okay?
Right.
I mean, really? I mean, you know, look, something else, there's a lot of other stuff that I'll buy something cheap or whatever. But we're talking about where the hell I'm sitting for 30 hours a week.
No, I buy that. And it makes a big difference, like you said. Like, I've never particularly been bothered by sitting in anything. Like, I have a straight wooden chair that I sat in for a while between when my last desk chair broke and when I got this one. And, you know, it never bothered me in the slightest. I've sat in like recliner type chairs for doing work on my laptop. Never bothered me. And so like to me, it's like, you know, oh, okay, they're all the fucking same. I want it to be somewhat comfortable, but I don't really care that much. But if you've got an issue where like if you sit in the wrong chair, you hurt. Well, yeah. That changes everything.
I mean, I have issues with like cars and like the seats. I'm like, I know, for example, if I get the you know, usually most of the base seats on cars that don't have like lumbar support and that kind of stuff, I sit on those for a couple of days. My back, oh my God, I want to die if I use that car. It's like usually it happens to me with rental cars. I'm like, I'll get a rental car and I'll be in it for a couple of days, and I'm like, oh my God, okay, I can't deal, you know. I just. Is what it is.
So we're not going to spend the whole time talking about chairs.
No, we've got a lot of topics.
I'm going to count that as one of your topics, and I'll go ahead and pick one of mine.
All right. Okay, so
we've had this on the list for a couple weeks, but it never, you know, we had other things to talk about. Sesame Street is going to HBO.
Yes. The new episodes are going first to HBO, right. And then they're going to...
They will show up on PBS
a number of months later, yes.
Yeah, so a large number of months, not like two or something.
Yeah, it's like 9 months or a year. It was like 8 or 9 months was my understanding, yeah.
So, I mean, what do you think? A lot of people were really wringing their hands about this and saying, oh my God, you know, Sesame Street used to be like the show for the masses and blah, blah, blah. And now to get the new episodes, you have to pay for HBO.
But here's the thing. I don't think anybody gives a shit about watching. Okay, if you're, say, for example, you don't watch the episode when it comes out. This is not like it's the news, okay?
Or even something like, you know, Game of Thrones.
Right.
You know, I mean...
I don't think it makes a difference if you get when you get the episode. I mean, I know children are not going to notice the difference.
Children are
going to
be quite happy with whatsoever. Watching the rerun of the episode from the 80s.
Yes, that's exactly right. So I'm like, look, if this is a way to make it that more people can enjoy the show, probably with less money from the public stations.
Well, here's the critical thing that is part of this. Sesame Street had basically cut their production in half in terms of number of new episodes a year because of funding drying up. And this is going to let them go back to their previous schedule, basically double what they're producing. It'll probably let them increase the production quality of what they're doing. They're going to have a bigger budget than they've had in a long, long time. And the end result is going to be more Sesame Street.
There's more Sesame Street and available to everybody. I'm like, I think it's a win-win. I got to be honest. You know, when I thought about it first, I had the same hand-wringing. And I thought about it. You know what? This is a win-win. I mean, you know, and those don't happen that often, you know?
Yeah, so, I think so. And I mean, you know, frankly, this is, this was prompted by the fact that more and more kids, when they watch shows like Sesame Street, are not watching them on their local PBS station. They're watching them on their iPads.
Yeah.
You know, and Sesame Street does not get the same level of royalties or whatever through that process. The local stations don't get the support that they would otherwise, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, come on, this is the new world. This is how it's going to be. Like if when my kid watches kids shows, we are very rare. I mean, we sometimes watch the live, you know, PBS Kids or Sprout or Disney Junior. That does sometimes happen. But the majority of the time, it's we go and pick the show we want to watch from one of several different places where we can stream things from and stream the show.
Right.
You know, or for some shows that we really like, maybe we buy it on Apple or something. But, you know, for the most part, no, we're not watching the local PBS channel. That's just not how we get our shows. And I think that trend is just going to accelerate and, you know, people have to figure out how to continue to do stuff. And I agree. I'm glad that Sesame Street has figured out a way to do this. And I agree. It's a win-win. I
think the PBS stations need to figure out a different way of getting to their viewers. It's just like public radio and like a lot of things, because a lot of people do want the local content combined with the national content. They've got to figure out a model.
Yeah, they've got to figure something out. But I mean, it's local network stations too, for that matter. I mean, like, you know, you're gonna.
Well, those they have an easier route. The only reason I say for local network is because one of the biggest revenue raisers is advertising for these. People want local targeted advertising. I mean, the local stations really become like their marketing arm to sell advertising locally.
No, absolutely. But the problem is that the viewers are slowly migrating away from that platform, except for.
Yeah. But the thing is that even you may try to, and if you go, but if you have, listen, it all boils back to the content.
Yeah.
And this is the same thing is happening with Sesame Street. Look, as long as the networks control the content and they control the distribution, then they can figure out the way to go and like earn that revenue. And it goes to why.
Right, but there's a fundamental question of the network versus local stations, because at a certain point, you know, back in the distant past, the networks needed the local stations because it's how they got their shows out. The networks can now bypass the local stations and get the shows directly to people.
But listen, the problem is that the network doesn't want to completely do that because they don't want to be only selling national advertising. Well, they want to be able to have you can generate far more revenue.
But it's the local stations that do the local ads, right?
They do the local ads, but it's like it would be far more difficult for the for the network to go out and create all these sales forces to go out there and capture that local revenue and create
Let me ask this question, because this is a point of confusion for me. The networks actually get a cut of the local ads?
Yeah, they make money off of, they make money off of that, because what happens is that the local station pays for the content, so they get revenue, and then the station charges. So yes, in the net effect, they get money from that. Okay.
Right. Okay.
So it's not all just going to the local station. So therefore they need that. They want that. I mean, it's just, you can't, I think it's, we're talking, it's more targeted marketing that you want to sell all around. And almost, if you look at every internet company, they want like advertising that is more specific to that audience.
Yeah. No,
and look, for as much as you and I that don't watch that much local news is still incredibly fucking popular.
See, here's the thing. If you really break it out, though, local stations pretty much at this point, like they used to do more stuff, but pretty much at this point, they only produce the local news.
Correct.
And maybe they're involved in some local sports, depending on the market.
Sports. Some local sports and local news. Right. That's it. They don't do almost any other.
But even local sports, like if it's a major city sports team, you know, the one of the national organizations is doing it anyway.
But the thing is that all those are sandwiched in between local shows around the team. You will see got the pre, and people like to watch those shows. Right.
My point though is there used to be sort of a mandatory connection between these two things. Now it's like, you know, okay, when you do want the local stuff, okay, the local station can provide that. But if you're looking for a national network show, you've got more and more options for how to get that over time. And now it's still sort of, you know, weirdo cord cutters that are not getting it, you know, directly from their local station. But that's just going to grow over time. You know, and as that develops, I think you're going to see, you know, it being a harder and harder time for the local entities to, you know, continue doing what they're doing now. They're going to have to figure out more to do than what they do today to make it really compelling for you to watch something on your local station versus getting it from somewhere else for the national stuff anyway.
Right. Well, anyway, well, you know, so that's, I mean, you and I don't think it's the end of the world. The fact that Sesame Street's going to be, that HBO put funding up to.
No, I think you're right. This is a positive thing, and I think we're going to see more things like this in the future. I mean, and Sesame Street's a particularly valuable property, of course, because it's got all the toys and merchandising associated with it as well. Right. But there are other things like that, and you're going to see more of this, and. You know,
I'm surprised that they were struggling for funding. I mean, even still, like I go to the kids' museums. They have the exhibits. Yep. I mean, my son, my God, he loves Elmo, for God's sakes. I'm like, I see so many kids that love it. It's like, it's amazing that I guess it's just there was such a change in, you know, the media landscape, like we keep talking, keeps evolving and changing so much that I guess, yeah, I mean, it's...
Well, and with kids shows and stuff, I mean, you're seeing, like, you know, at this point, you know, Alex just started watching a new kids show that's a Netflix original. Okay. You know, it's Dino Trucks. You know, combination dinosaurs and trucks. You know?
Okay.
And it's an okay show, whatever. But the point is, it's coming from Netflix. It's not coming from your traditional channels, you know? And you're just going to see more and more of that kind of stuff as time goes on. I mean, this...
I gotta be honest. I have Netflix. I really don't like the movie content. And I barely... The only thing I've watched really on Netflix is House of Cards.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, the movies, they're all old, stale. I mean, shit, I'm like, really? I'm paying this to watch some 30-year-old movie? No, thanks. Shit.
Hey, a good movie is a good movie no matter what decade it was built.
I get it, but that's not what I want to be... I mean, when usually I'm going to be sitting down in front of the thing to pick a movie on demand, I want to see new stuff. I don't know. I just
see,
you know.
See, like I don't have that bias. Like I have a list of things I've heard of that I want to see that are everywhere from the dawn of movies to the current day, and I don't really care too much if the movie I'm going to watch comes up and it's like it's a 60s movie or a 70s movie or an 80s movie. I'm like, okay, cool. Assuming the movie is decent. Now, as I've reviewed some of these movies when we've been talking, and some of them have really sucked. But, you know, whatever. They're new movies that suck, too. Like, yesterday, well, I guess that's not a new
movie. Is there a way that I could add movies to your list?
Yeah. I have it on a public wiki on my site, wiki.abelsmay.com. Go ahead and edit the page.
Okay, beautiful. I'm going to add a movie for you to watch.
I think there's a bug that anybody but me is getting an error when they edit wiki that I haven't fixed yet.
Wait, what is it? Wiki.what?
Wiki.abelsmay.com.
Okay, beautiful. All right, I'm going to... You know, so you've, let me ask.
Oh, yeah, and any of our listeners, like, feel free to add things, too. But yes. Like I said, I think there's actually a bug. My dad let me know that he was having trouble editing my wiki, and I haven't solved the bug yet. Like, I can edit it, no problem, but other people are having issues editing it, and so
Says main list, are those movies you've watched?
No, this is all movies that are on my potential movies to... watch list.
Are you saying you've never watched War Games?
No, I watched it when it was new, but I haven't watched it recently.
Okay, well, okay. So I'm saying they are
not all movies that I've never seen. There are movies that I'm like, oh, I should watch that. So some of them
so
are.
How do I make this come up to the top of your list if I want to?
I pick randomly from the list, so there's no top.
Oh, mother of God. I'm like, okay, maybe I can delete everything. I was just thinking one thing. Yeah, that's a great thing about Wiki. There you go. Beautiful.
Okay. We're at the 20-minute mark, and we covered two topics.
Okay. All right. Go.
We're going to take a break.
Take a break.
We will come back, and it will be Yvonne's turn to pick a topic. We'll be back after this. Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now, there are four ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at I-M-B-O, I-M-B-O-U. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show, because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you. Okay, we are back.
So the stock market.
Yes,
this
the stock
week,
market.
You know, so we talked about this a little bit a couple of weeks ago.
Well, we talked about China in the context of whether whether it was going to impact the rest of the world or not. And at that point, you were like, yeah, you know, China is pretty small compared to everything else. It's going to be fairly isolated.
Well, so the thing is that China continued like to just freaking collapse. So now, in the big scheme of things, Chinese stock market had doubled this year. Okay, since the beginning of the year. So think about how crazy that is. January 1st, it just doubled. So it went and it just fell back like 50%. So it's back to where it was at the beginning of the year.
Okay, so it went way up and then it went way back down. But yeah, bottom line, it basically
like
lost
bubble.
It basically lost 8 months.
Yeah. Now I think the reason why the stock markets in the U.S. were going down did not have to do really with the stock market in China falling. Because the stock market in China, I think that what people started looking is that it was a sign of a slowdown in the Chinese economy. And a lot of people started getting concerned. So what the secondary effects of that were, and really what really triggered everybody concerned about, okay, are the Chinese like really fudging the numbers with their growth numbers, was all of a sudden, unannounced, the Chinese devalued their currency. And everybody was like, what the fuck? They never do that. And they did it. And everybody's like, well, why the hell would the Chinese devalue the currency? Unless the economy was really a lot shittier than they were fessing up to. And that really that is really what started having like ripple effects across the world, because look, Chinese economy right now is the second largest economy in the world. I mean, I was like astonished by the fact that right now, to give you an example, how big the Chinese economy has gotten, for a number of European luxury brands, the number one market is no longer the U.S. or Europe anymore. It's China. You know, for Apple, for example, China now is like second largest country in revenue behind the U.S. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's no longer the small country that people used to do business. I mean, in 20 years, it now is about 15 to 17% of the world GDP. And I think that what people all of a sudden really started panicking was that the Chinese government started doing moves like the devaluation. They did some interest rate cuts. They were doing a whole bunch of things. They were going out into the stock market and actually buying stock directly, for God's sakes, in order to prop up the stock market. They started passing like regulations to prohibit short sales and do all sorts of things. And they started taking all these actions by the Chinese government as some sign of desperation that something seriously far bigger and wrong is happening. And that's why all of a sudden every stock market around the world took a big dump. Now, it's been all of a sudden it's like held back the last couple of days. But it still leaves a big question as to what the hell really is going on in China. And I don't think people really have a good answer at this point of what the heck the problem is. I do think that based on what a lot of people information are getting, is that the Chinese economy, it used to be growing at double digits, north of 10% every year. That's what the growth rate. Earlier this year, it slowed down to around 7%, or so they said. I think people are estimating now the economy's only going at 3.5%. It's growing at 3%. It's barely faster than the U.S. economy. And in actual terms, in terms of actual dollars, if they grew only 3%, it means that it's really, in absolute terms, it's growing probably about the same speed or slower than the U.S. Now, people are saying that the Chinese economy was set to take become the largest economy like pretty quickly in the U.S. Well, I got to tell you, if it's growing at that speed, it's not going to happen. Not anytime soon. And I think a lot of people, you know, commodity prices got killed because China had been such a big buyer of commodities that was really driving up the price. So commodity prices, oil, steel. I saw coffee getting killed. I was like, you know, it's like almost every commodity getting killed, and companies that were doing a lot of business with China. So, there's still, the markets have stabilized somewhat, and we'll have to see what other moves happen. Like near, and honestly, everybody is like really waiting for more information at this point in order to try to.
Things have been really volatile. I mean, we're all down, 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 up, down. Yeah. So.
Oh yeah, it's all over the fucking place. Yeah. Berserk.
And one pet peeve of mine, like people have been talking about, like, you know, third largest point gain ever, blah, blah, blah. For fuck's sake, talk percentages.
Yes.
You know, and whenever somebody's talking about the points on any of these indices, the NASDAQ, the S&P, the Dow Jones, whatever, the points are stupid. You know, all you're doing is typing.
All you want to know is really percentages. That's people are stupid. I mean, what the hell? What do you want me to tell you? Percentages.
Because, of course, like, oh, biggest point gain ever. Well, we're at a higher spot than we'd started ever before. And so,
well, think about, you know, for example, like when the Black Monday crash in 87, was it?
20 something percent, right?
It was 30. Well, yeah, it was like 500-600 points. It was 500-600 points back then. Was like 30% of the value of the stock market in one day. Okay. Now that's a fucking, you know, it was, let me see, it was 22.61%. It was 508 points. Now think about this, 22.6%, we were at 17,000. Oh gosh, I got it on, sorry, 17,000. So times 0.2. It would have been a 3,400 point drop. Listen, if the Dow had fallen 3,400 points this week, look, you would have heard me crying all the way from frickin' Seattle. Okay, all right. I mean, I would have been like IVing scotch over here, for God's sakes. Yeah, no, the stock market did not fall 3,400 points. Okay. Not even close.
Okay, so before we move on to the next topic, I mean, your summary there was like, nobody knows what the hell is going on, lots of uncertainty. Are you going to hazard a guess? What I mean, are we done with this? Is it going to go up more, down
more?
No,
I think
there's
going to
be a greater effect on the economy, or is this just the stock market?
Listen, until there is more transparency or some additional information and more earnings and more revenue information from what's going on and really in China, I don't think we're going to know.
Do we anticipate getting that kind of information? One of the issues is they're going to get
the information from the companies, the foreign companies that do a lot of business in China. You know, you've got the Apples of the world, Mercedes, BMWs, GM, you know.
Right. So you'll get information on how they're doing in China. You won't necessarily get detailed information on what's going on with the Chinese companies.
And that's really going to really tell us what the hell is going on. And that we'll know over the next couple of months. But we're not going to know like right now. So that uncertainty is still going to hang over the market substantially. I know some companies, one of them, Apple, actually went and their CEO, you know, given the what was happening, decided to make a statement just to tell people, hey, you know what? I'm sorry, but you know, we've got a lot of stores in China and the sky isn't falling. So I'm not sure why everybody's like panic, but you know, if the concern is that, you know, we can say flat out that that's not what's going on. So I will assume that a lot of other companies that do a lot of business in China will probably try to provide more information early to let people know what is going on. And if the information's positive, then okay. If the information's negative, then, well, you know, then we've got problems. So.
Okay. my topic next, the Apple Car. So last week there were some additional reports of like Apple executives trying to arrange time at like test facilities somewhere in California. What do you think of all this? I mean, last time we talked about potential Apple cars was a number of months ago, and your take on it was they're probably not building their actual own car. They're probably building some sort of test bed for Apple integration into cars or something like that. But the rumors have been more and more like, yeah, no, they're doing a self-driving car just like Google.
I still think that they're just doing technology. They're not actually building the car. That's what I think. I think
they're not going to pull a Tesla.
No.
And
I don't see it.
A Google.
Yeah, no, I don't see it. I think that they want to build a technology in order to enable other cars to do that. I don't think they want to build their own car. I just don't see it.
Because they've been having this thing of trying to get into new areas and blah, blah, blah. And you've had a whole bunch of quotes from Apple executives talking about how like they think current cars suck. And
look, Steve Jobs thought current cars sucked. I mean, I will say this. I mean, he you know, was always upset about that state. It's one of the reasons why he liked cars. And so he worked a lot of like doing this integration with the iPod into cars, and started doing that car integration early, so they have been doing that for a long time. I mean, look, I get what people are saying, but I don't see it, but I could be wrong. I mean, we've talked about a little bit about how much money Apple has on hand, right? Look, if they decided to blow $10 billion on a car project,
they could.
They could. Yeah. That is not going to make a dent in the bottom line.
They could acquire some car companies.
Yeah.
You know, so if they felt like it, they could jump in with both feet. The question is, you know, is it worth it? And I think, you know, like Google, I think part of this is, you know, experimentation and skunk works and see what works, see what doesn't, try out the idea. And then if it looks like it's got legs, then they go for it. If they try something out and they're like, you know, this kind of sucks, then they drop it and you never, right. It never sees the light of day.
Right.
I mean, there are all kinds of things that Apple and, you know, any other company you could possibly name has tried, you know, in their internal skunkworks labs at various stages, and only a small percentage of them see the light of day.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. I think it would be fun. I think one of the things that you are seeing here is, you know, with Tesla, Google, and maybe Apple all like playing around in the car space, you've got the possibility of new companies coming in and just doing things that the old traditional car companies just aren't really thinking about or are being very, very slow about. Whereas, you know, somebody coming in with sort of the tech mindset on things may jump in and just say, you know, we're going to do this. I don't care that nobody's ever done it before or, you know, has dismissed this idea or whatever. We're going to do it and see how it works.
It could be. Could be, but I don't know. It's I'm still saying, it's, you know.
Well, speaking to one that's actually real at the time being, before we move on off of this, you know, a company like Tesla, do you see, like, 15 years in the future, is Tesla going to be one of the big car companies, or is it going to be an also-ran because the current existing big companies will decide, oh, yeah, that's a good idea, and they'll do it, and they'll catch up, and they'll be the ones to win already.
What? I mean, they've made some big announcements. A lot of them are already, and they're making big announcements. The automotive market has proven to be a market that has allowed, like, small niche players to be successful. Okay.
But I
guys
want to
make something
is,
that's a super end.
Do you
I don't
think like
think
in 10 15 years
grow.
Is Tesla going to still be a small niche player are they going to try to be the next Ford or GM?
I don't think that they've got the breadth to get to that level. No. I think they will continue to be a successful niche player. Hmm. That's what I think they're going to be.
Because their whole plan is work their way down from the high end to the low end.
So, I get that, but even still, I think that it's not that I'm going to say it's going to be a small business, but I don't think they're going to be the next Ford.
Right. Okay. I guess we'll find out.
Yep.
Because my sort of take on it is that if somebody like Tesla can innovate very quickly and do interesting new things, they can sort of get to the next level of a bunch of these technologies before the old guys get off the starting gate. And if they're successful at that, then at a certain point, people will be like, well, why would I buy the Ford? It's old and junky. Let me go over here to this new, like, Tesla thing that has all the cool technologies. And by the time the old guys figure out what happened and catch up, they're screwed. And the question is how fast they can react and jump up. And like you said, a lot of them are already seeing the writing on the wall and they're trying to do the innovation. But the question is, can they move fast enough?
Right. Exactly. And I think that they are moving really quick. I'll tell you what, that BMW right now is about to launch their new top of the line 7 series. And they announced that they have incorporated, they had done this very niche car, two of them called the i8 and the i3, which they're these little like funky looking cars. But they've said that they have combined a technology with like electric propulsion and like hybrid technology and other stuff and whatever that they're working on, that they expect that the new car will be able to do over 100 miles per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
With the hybrid technology. I mean, this is for their largest luxury sedan. That's a massive leap forward in terms of fuel economy. I mean, there would be nothing really on the road that would be close to matching that. And I think that a lot of people still, despite the fact that I know Tesla's putting the superchargers and all this stuff and whatever, I still think that, having a, I think the automakers that straddle that midpoint, as Toyota has shown with their hybrids, is that there are going to be more successful than others in terms of getting us there. So, and that's what BMW is gambling on. And so, but then the car is being launched right now. So we'll gauge the success of that vehicle as it rolls out in the next 12 months and see.
Okay, there you go. Enough about cars. Your turn for a topic.
What about so Trump going to our like more Trump. So Trump goes off on Megyn Kelly again.
Yes.
Just starts like
freaking
like.
Supposedly he had a truce with Fox News. He had a phone conversation with Roger Ailes or whatever, and they both agreed to be nice to each other or something, and they had a truce, and then he Megyn Kelly comes back from vacation, and Trump just like decides to go off.
Just starts like fucking like just hammering at her, just like it's just ridiculous, just hammering and hammering and hammering and hammering. Just calling her names, telling her that she sucks. It's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous shit. I don't know. It's acting like a little child.
I was going to say, how old is he?
Exactly. I don't know. I mean, the guy is just a little
here's the thing, though. Again, the people who are Trump supporters right now are not going, oh my God, I can't believe he's still on about that. Look, they're like, go Trump! Yes!
Okay, you know what? The brainwashing network, Fox News, Roger Ailes basically just started fucking hammering against Trump. Look, if they don't have Fox on their side, he's not going anywhere. I'm sorry. No way.
Who's not going anywhere? Trump?
Trump!
Yeah. I mean, he has been putting more and more out there that basically indicates, look, he's not dropping out, no matter what happens with the polls, he's in it, at least until the first few actual, votes, and it looks like he's gearing up local operations in a variety of states up through something they're calling the SEC primary, which is a single day where a whole bunch of southern states are going to vote at the same time. He's got the money behind it. He's not worried about that. He's said he's willing to spend some huge amount of money, $500 million to $1 billion, I think he said. Who knows if he actually will do that?
Oh, God, what a load of shit. What a load of shit. And let's be clear. Trump is barely spending money.
Yes. That's the thing. This is the genius here. So far, almost everything. He's the goddamn front runner, and he's spending almost nothing because he gets 100% free media because all he has to do is say some crazy shit every day, and he's all over the headlines.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I mean, all he's doing is just traveling around and doing events, and he doesn't have a big staff. Okay. So this is bullshit. I mean, this is just ridiculous.
So let's say there are a couple more things about Trump that I wanted to mention. Since we started with Fox, the next thing is the whole thing with this reporter. What's his name?
Jorge Ramos.
There you go. So what was the deal with that? I mean, it once again got him a whole bunch of attention for being a rude jackass.
Basically that Jorge Ramos had been trying to get Trump to sit down for an interview to discuss his stance on immigration, and Trump had been refusing and refusing and refusing and refusing. So he decided to go and say, well, he's going to have a press conference. Screw this. I'm going to go to the press conference. I'm going to go ask questions. So press conference starts, he wants to be the first question. He starts asking a question, and Trump just basically says, I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to somebody else.
Well, I mean, to be fair, normally at press conferences, whoever's giving the press conference calls on the reporters they want to ask a question, and he was just yelling out.
He was yelling out because he had been avoiding him, and he just figured that he would never ask him the question, so he just said, fuck it.
Yes.
That's pretty much it.
So Trump had security throw him out, right?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
And then let him back in.
And then he let him back in.
And then he got to ask some questions, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he showed that he's a complete ignorant idiot, okay, by basically, you know, because Jorge Ramos knows all the facts on immigration. And so he goes, one of the best ones that Jorge was prepared. The wall. And I'm like, dude, do you realize, right, that 60% of illegal immigrants come in by plane, right? I don't believe that. I'm like, really?
You just have to build a really high wall.
I guess. I mean, most people that are immigrants are people that have overstay tourist visas.
Right.
Okay? That's a reality. So I don't know what the fuck Trump's plan to do about that, unless we have no more tourists.
So speaking of which, I wanted to see this particular graph of this. oh, here we go. That Gallup released a set of polling this week. So the article, it's on Gallup's website, gallup.com, released August 24th by Linda Saad, S-A-A-D. Anyway, it has the favorability ratings for all of the Republican candidates amongst Hispanics. So, their favorable rating minus their unfavorable rating, or vice versa, I forget. So anyway, so a positive number means they're net favorable, negative number means they're net negative. So discounting Trump, the Republican field ranges from Jeb Bush with a plus 11% net favorable rating, followed by Marco Rubio at 5%, Pataki at 3%, etc., down to Rick Perry and Ted Cruz at negative 7%. So the range of all the other Republicans is from plus 10 to negative 7. Did you see where Donald Trump is on this rating?
No.
Negative 51%.
Jesus.
So 14% of Hispanics interviewed say they view Trump favorably, while 65% view him unfavorably, yielding a net favorable score of negative 51%. The next worst is Ted Cruz at negative 7. and meanwhile, of course,
can I say something?
Yes.
If you've got that negative perceptive from the Hispanic community, and like I said, all these people saying about him winning the presidency, your shot at winning the presidency is zero.
I mean, I mentioned before that if you put all other demographic groups and held them constant, in order to win the presidency, the Republican this time has to double what Mitt Romney got in on the Hispanic vote. Donald Trump's not going to do that.
No, not really. No.
I mean, with these, you know, it's highly unlikely any of them are going to do that. But right. Donald Trump is certainly not going to do it.
Donald Trump is certainly not going
now,
to do it.
Now, of course, that's not saying...
I mean, he has got the Hispanics. Here's the thing. The thing is that everybody keeps worrying about Trump. The Hispanic community is so fired up against this asshole. Okay, all right. Myself included. Okay, all right. I have been sitting at tables where normally people, Hispanics that are even like Republicans, they were at the table just railing against Trump, and these are people that I've known as Republicans, and they are, oh my God, they despise him. What he has done is basically have a whole bunch of people, that Hispanics, even the conservative ones, that even the ones that were likely to maybe vote for a Republican, just basically be absolutely appalled at the Republican Party at this point.
Right. I mean, the argument, of course, is you don't have to necessarily double the Hispanic vote because you could make it up in other demographic groups instead. But come on, it's going to be...
Who are they going to be? The Asians? What? Blacks? Yeah.
Well, you know, I have one more thing to say about Trump, but since you mentioned Asians, of course, Jeb Bush made the comment that when he was talking about anchor babies, he wasn't talking about Hispanics. He was talking about Asians.
Well, no. He didn't say that he wasn't talking about Hispanics, talking about Asians. He says that that statement includes Asians.
Oh, okay. That's whatever.
Well, anyway, regardless, it was just like, I mean, Mr. Foot in the Mouth sticks it in the mouth again. Yes.
One more thing about Trump before moving on is that several states now have been floating the idea of the Republican parties in that state requiring a pledge that you would support the Republican nominee as a requirement to get on the ballot.
That's right.
For the primaries.
I heard that.
And this is moving forward in a couple of different states.
Of course,
so far, Trump notably has refused to make such a pledge. So this is another one of these, you know, invisible primary, the establishment makes the rules kind of thing, where the establishment can go in here and say, okay, well, we don't really want you, and you're saying the shit, so we're going to make it a ballot requirement for you to state this thing that so far you've declined to state in order to even get on the ballot. And so there are a couple of possibilities of how that kind of thing could play out. One is, of course, Trump could say, well, screw you then, and then go take his ball and run as a third party. The other, though, is I think, you know, there have been a couple of statements where it sounds like Trump is starting to, you know, soften on whether or not he would support the Republican nominee. But here's the bottom line. If you make that a requirement, he can say, okay, I pledged to support the Republican nominee. He can still change his mind later.
Right.
You know, so this actually doesn't do all that much because, I mean, come on. Who really believes that, you know, Trump can make that pledge? Who really believes that if he ends up at the end of a bruising primary process, losing anyway, and feeling like it was unfair to him, that he just wouldn't say, well, fuck you all, I'm running as a third party anyway?
Well, but I, you know, look, I mean, I know that I guess he doesn't care about really undermining his credibility. I mean, is that worth saying? I mean, is he going to go? I mean, is he going to be like, he hasn't accepted that pledge? I'm sure that question is going to come up a few more times. You don't think that it's going to be like really like incendiary to fact, oh yeah, look, there he goes. Yeah, yeah, he keeps saying the debate's not, but look, he signed over here that he said this. Who are you going to believe? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he can bluster his way out of that by just saying, well, this is an irrelevant question because I'm going to be the nominee.
Maybe.
You know, and he said flat out at the first debate, no, I'm not going to make that pledge. And he could be more explicit about this, and he could go after him directly, and you say, you got to be kidding. If Bush over here wins, you think I'm going to support that asshole? And people would love it.
Yeah, I know.
People would love that.
Some people.
One of the national polls, a new national poll came out in the last few days that has him now at 40% of the Republican Party. Now, there's only one poll. It might be an outlier.
Yeah, but it's an outlier. Come on. I looked at the trend of the polls. That is a crazy outlier poll. It is.
I am not going to say that until there are further polls backing that up. As we always say, look at the average, look at the average, look at the average. And as of today, the Real Clear Politics average still has him at 22%, and they're also very selective. Like the poll that I just mentioned is not even included in their thing because it's from a minor polling company.
It's some bullshit Mickey Mouse, you know, whatever thing. Who knows? I mean, no, so, I don't buy it.
So we'll see. You know, we'll see. But you know, even that a bullshit Mickey Mouse operation and Gravis is not quite that bad, although a lot of people discount them in some areas. But, you know, it's so far, you know, if his real support was like 5%.
But go to the primary polls anyway. He's still not at that number.
No, I know. And
I went to look at the Iowa polls, look at the New Hampshire polls. That's not there. Not at that number, anyway.
Well, not at that number, but he is doing very well in those states.
No, but he's not doing that number.
But I continue he's to say, like, and we had a Twitter conversation on like the 25th or 26th, I forget. So people look at my Twitter and Yvonne's Twitter, at Abelsmay, at I am Bo. We had a conversation with BYU fan and Scott NY71 about this stuff. But anyway, the bottom line, I think at this point, and I've said this a couple shows in a row now, look, the end of the Trump phenomena is not going to come from a steep, dramatic collapse over a short period of time.
It's going to be a long, slow fizzle.
There'll be a long, slow fizzle, but more to the point, I think at this point, he's shown that he's got some staying power. He's shown that he's going to throw money at
this. But there's going to be fatigue about this shit.
There will be fatigue. Here's my bottom line. The Republicans are going to screw themselves over if people don't start dropping out, because they're dividing up the anti-Trump. If there are still anywhere close to this number of candidates by the time we get to Iowa, they're in trouble. I mean, and I predicted they're going to be less than 10 by the time we get to Iowa, and I stand by that prediction. But I think you're right. What needs to happen here is that people need to stop dropping out. And so we get all the support from, you know, Graham and Jindal and Santorum and Perry and Christie and Huckabee and Kasich, who aren't going anywhere right now in the polls. Well, some of those are heading up right now, but you know what I mean. Whoever's at the bottom tier, they need to get out so that their support can be redistributed amongst the more serious people who are getting high poll numbers. And then you'll start seeing not necessarily Trump plummeting, but you'll see some of these other guys heading upward. And I think that's how you're going to see this play out. But, you know, if these guys don't start getting out, that just all plays to Trump's advantage. I mean,
I agree. I totally agree that it does play to his advantage. But look, I think we agree. Number one, there's not going to be not all these people. Trump has sucked the air out of the room so much that the fringe candidates have to drop out because they're just not going to be getting money. Right. Number one, they're just not going to be getting money. So they're going to die an early death, a whole bunch of them. And I think that once that happens, then you've got a real view of who the fuck the real candidates are. Then you can really gauge where the hell he is. Because, like you said, they're so, you know, think if you combine like Jeb's support maybe with like a couple of the other moderates, like a Walker or something or whatever, whatnot, he probably would be well over where Trump is.
Walker's not a moderate, but maybe Kasich. Bush and Kasich are sort of the same, for example, to say that.
I mean, you know, so yeah, I mean, you know.
And Rubio. Rubio's probably old.
Right.
You know, you add Bush, Rubio, Kasich, you're already more than Trump.
Exactly. Right.
You know, so, you know, it's just a question of, okay, people need to start saying, okay, it's clear I'm not winning.
You know, Rubio needs to go over to Jeb and say, hey, can I be Veep? You know, look.
Let's make a deal.
Yeah, start making the deals now. Don't wait. Make a deal now. That would be my idea.
Although Bush and Rubio can't be on a ticket together because they're both from Florida.
So?
The Constitution requires that the president and vice president be from different states.
Really?
Yeah.
Shit. Fuck. Well, then make him, I don't know, secretary of his ball. I don't know, something, whatever.
Yes. You could work out something. Or one of them could move.
Right! There you go.
Yeah, because there have been cases in the past where people have gotten around that rule. Like Dick Cheney was living in Texas, but moved his official residence back to Wyoming so that he could run with Bush.
Bastard.
Yeah.
He's okay. Probably, you know, it's all lies. He's from a planet. Where's Darth Vader from?
Oh, God. Okay. Tatooine.
Right!
Let's take another break, and we'll be back for round three. Back after this.
Did you check his birth certificate?
Yes, of course we did. Back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, here we go. It's round three.
I don't make a good birther, I guess. Anyway.
You weren't very convincing.
No, not particularly.
You know, but we should start talking about, it was Ted Cruz that was born in Canada, right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, we got to start he's acknowledged born in Canada, not even like, you know, rumors that maybe he was. You know, no question about it. He was born in Canada.
Oh, fucking Canadian bastard. I mean, come on, he can't run for president.
Which is, of course, not true.
And I love Canada, for God's sakes. Okay, I'm just joking.
Just like the Obama stuff, of course. Even if he was freaking born in Kenya, his mother was American, so he is still a natural-born American
U.S. citizen. Well, but apparently, like, I don't know, based on, you know...
There were some arguments that actually you would not be a natural-born American citizen unless your father was a citizen and your mother didn't count, based on some English common law from several centuries ago or some... thing like that. Anyway, it's all nonsense.
It's not that he was born in Hawaii anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Well, he was born in Hawaii. Even if he wasn't born in Hawaii, his mother was an American citizen. Case closed. Anyway, moving on. Right. my turn for round three. Ashley Madison.
Ah, well, I got that on my list too. So there you go.
So Ashley Madison.
I'm not on the list. Okay,
great. You aren't on the list. You've checked.
I'm not on the list.
You've checked. Am I?
I haven't checked. I don't, but I know I never registered unless somebody else did.
Well, that's the thing. You know, one of the things that came out is there's no verification, so anybody could register with anybody else's information.
Oh, son of a bitch! Really? Fuck.
Yes. So,
what I heard. Well, a couple of things aside. The one thing, I don't know if you heard about this. So they put this bounty out, right, to try to discover who the hackers are. And the police were saying that apparently they've attributing a couple of suicides already happening to the fact that they've been on that some people were discovered as being on the site. I mean, I'm shocked. I mean, at the suicides. I mean, I'm just.
It is very sad. I mean, and this is why people were sort of cautioning against, you know, calling out and victimizing these people that, you know, they may or may not have done anything here. And one of the stats that came out today, and I'm trying to find this stupid article, but of course I don't have it in front of me. Someone ran an analysis on the Ashley Madison stuff, because the thing that happened this week is they released a whole bunch more data, or over the last 2 weeks, we haven't talked about it yet. They released all of the user information. They released a whole bunch of internal documents. They released a whole, you know, several bunches of new data. But somebody today did the analysis looking at the male to female ratio on Ashley Madison.
Oh, fuck yeah, I know.
and specifically looking at people who are actually active, because they determined, first of all, that Ashley Madison themselves were creating tens of thousands of fake female profiles that, you know, were just made up out of whole cloth. But when they actually did the analysis of like active users and tried to map them back to male versus female, there were something like on the order of, I'm going to forget the exact number, 20 something million men to 1500 women.
Nah, come on.
Yes. Who are actually active users. Yes, indeed.
Nah, really?
Yes. The whole thing was a giant scam to get men to pay for, you know, the sort of fantasy of let me find people to hook up with. And apparently there were very few actual women on there. So therefore, most likely very few people actually having affairs through Ashley Madison. So these people were signing up and trying to hook up to people, but getting nothing but fake profiles, like at best stringing them along.
Wow.
That's pretty sad.
Yes.
That's pretty fucking sad.
And I'm sorry I don't have the article reference. I'm sure if you Google it, you can find it. But, man, yeah.
But, okay, you're saying that, and then, okay, so, because I was seeing, they put up this map, right? So I had to read that article you just mentioned. They put up this map that showed that...
I found it. It's an article at Gizmodo. That was published on August 26th. Almost none of the women in the Ashley Madison database ever used the site, by Annalee Newitz. She did the analysis. And in the database as a whole, there were 31 million men and 5.5 million women in the database as a whole. But okay, then when you analyzed it to find out who was actually checking their Ashley Madison messages, in other words, they were logging into their site and they were engaging in some sort of activity, it was 20.3 million men and 1,492 women.
So I guess they were all from India, I guess, the people who were creating the fake data, because they showed this Google map that showed like the preponderance of like where, you know, men or women on the site. And it showed that only in like India, for example, were there places where there were even or like more women were on the site than men. So what do you me that what they had some Indian programmers creating like
I'm sure they had not even programmers. There were probably people hired to just sit there and make. There was apparently one lawsuit from an Ashley Madison employee who sued them for bad working practices, and she was assigned the job of like creating 10,000 accounts in the space of a month or something like that. You know, so yeah, they were doing that kind of shit, and it wasn't just like, you know, random people abusing the service. This was Ashley Madison themselves, the company, realizing that they had all men and then making all kinds of fake female accounts.
Oh man! Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. So. Yeah.
Wow.
And you know, and so therefore, you know, but yes, nevertheless, the men who are on this and who are getting publicly shamed about it are having all kinds of difficulties, and as you said, a couple look like they may have committed suicide over it. And so this is
wow.
You know, this is the reason even a scummy site like this,
number of people who use the, I'm looking at the number of people who use the Ashley Madison chat system, men 11 million, women 2400. Number of people who check their Ashley Madison messages, men 20 million, women 1400. I mean, wow. Wow.
You know, jeez. Sometimes I hear people complain about a bad male to female ratio. What does that say about
Ed? Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, so either this says, okay, it says a lot of things. Well, number one, I'm going to say men are very gullible, apparently, number one. Can I just say that? Okay, let's just start with that. I guess they could be just teased by somebody faking to be a woman. I guess they're just not all like idiots like lining up. The second thing, apparently, men are just compared to women are just one hell of a fluff work cheating bastards.
Is any of this a huge surprise?
Honestly, no.
Okay, enough about Ashley Madison. Your turn, Yvonne.
Okay, what about the three Americans to stop a terror attack in France?
Oh, right.
Forgot about all about that huh?
Entirely.
So a guy is on the train, and my understanding was that apparently first the conductor saw that this guy had weapons and tried to stop him, but then the Americans noticed that, you know, the conductor's having difficulty, and they went and they said, well, you know, let's stop this dude. And they got into a fight with him, and basically one of them got hurt, but eventually they did disarmed a guy and apparently beat the shit out of him until he was unconscious and stopped the guy from taking a machine gun and basically trying to, kill a whole bunch of people.
Yep.
So, what do you think? I don't know.
I'm glad he was stopped.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. You know, this kind of stuff, it's not like, this stuff happens and it will continue happening. It happens here. We've had, this was, this guy apparently was from Morocco, I think, originally. But look, how many times haven't we had people in the U.S., Americans go and do attacks like this themselves? We've had most. I think there was a stat that we showed that most attacks in the U.S. were homebrewed terrorists, not Muslim terrorists and stuff. Unfortunately, this is like life as it is. I'm glad that these guys were brave enough to go see what was going on and not shy away from doing something that probably stopped quite a lot of people from getting killed. And I'm glad that they got hurt, but there wasn't life threatening injuries.
Okay. I have nothing else to say about that. I'll do my next topic. Just an update on stuff I've talked about before. The police found my mom's car that was stolen.
Oh.
Yep. So.
Stripped.
No, not really. What happened was it was in a fender bender. And after the fender bender, the guy pulled over into a parking lot and then got off on foot and ran. And
I guess the guy had been driving it for it, so this guy that stole it had been just driving it,
or he handed it over to somebody else who was driving it. Who knows? Yeah. So it was full.
That's very interesting. It's very weird. Usually, crooks don't do that with a car or just turn it. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, this fender bender happened maybe 2 miles from my mom's house.
Oh, come on.
Exactly. And so they found it. All of her stuff that had been in the car, well, most of her stuff that was in the car was long gone. There were a few random things, but nothing of value. And there was a bunch of stuff that the other people had put in there. I mean, there was a...
Well, there you go. So she gained stuff.
Well, no, the police took all that. But, in the end, the insurance company had already essentially determined that it was a stolen car. She'd already bought a new used car. The insurance company just took it and took care of it. It was found. It was full of stuff. The guy apparently jumped out of the car and ran. And
did the police get any leads of who the guy was that was driving the car?
Not as far as I know.
No.
So the police called my mom, called me. We had to go to where the car was, go through all the stuff in the car, pick out what was my mom's, what wasn't. They took the stuff that wasn't, and they're like, the insurance company hadn't officially taken over the title yet, so they called us rather than calling the insurance company. And so then we had to, we drove it back to my place, actually, because they still had the keys to the car. So we didn't put it back to her apartment. We took it back to my house and, then called the insurance company and had all that dealt with. It was found after 2 weeks or something. But because apparently, as you mentioned, really dumb criminal.
Yeah. Although
he wasn't caught.
I think it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, well. Okay, your turn again.
Let me see. Shit, I'm out of subjects.
Okay.
Wait, hold on. Wait, I'm going to take a look at an old list.
I still got a
list. Let's see. I think we talked about Jared already, right?
Not really. We mentioned him in passing last episode. You want to talk about Jared?
So now he's so now it's been found that his entire charity that he had was all fake.
Oh, nice.
Yes. That all the money was basically 60% of the money raised by the charity was just going to pay to the director, who was the guy that was his pimp. basically, getting him the girls. Nice. And so, and like 65% of the money is going to the guy, the rest of the money's unaccounted for. And I mean, I guess he's basically, he's just pleading guilty. The guy's a scumbag and he's going to jail. I mean, he's just, he's done. He's out, you know? Wait,
so he's not going to be on ads for Subway anymore?
I don't know why. He has been fired.
You know, he could probably record them from jail.
That would be quite an interesting campaign, I would say.
Yeah. Okay. My turn again. And I do have a few of these left, and we're going to try to do four segments. We're finishing up round three right now. Which is D's Nuts. You know D's Nuts?
Oh, yes. The presidential candidate.
Yes. Yeah, so I had actually mentioned him in passing. I don't know if a few shows ago or whether it was on Twitter or whatever. But
is he doing good?
But PPP, Public Policy Polling, started almost a month ago now, including this guy in their polling. And apparently what happened, so we've mentioned on the show before that anybody can register. It's free. Apparently, somebody registered the candidate D's Nuts for President, and they sent a message to PPP polling saying, hey, I'm running for president. Will you poll me? And they got it and were like, this is an awesome idea. And so they started doing polls specifically in the three-way race. Like if you were doing a three-way race between Clinton, Bush, and Trump, they would also put, well, what would it be if it was Clinton, Trump, and D's Nuts? Because, look, and there actually is a point to this besides just being funny, which is that D's Nuts was getting, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9% despite being a nobody,
right,
in these polls.
Literally.
Yeah, and the reality is, it turns out this was a 15-year-old kid.
Right.
Who did this for fun and set up this candidate. And so completely, like, not a real candidate at all. But nevertheless, if you call people up and ask them, who do you prefer, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, or D's Nuts? 7 to 8% of people are going to say D's Nuts.
Right.
So that just gives you an idea of, like, A, you know, how much to trust polls on these things and how to interpret them.
Especially at this point.
And especially at this point, but also it's like, you know, how much is real versus how much is sort of protest or, you know, I'm going to say D's Nuts. Because it's kind of funny, and it's not Clinton, and I don't like Clinton, and I don't like Trump, so I'm going to say D's Nuts.
Right.
You know, and you get this, and so you get this kind of effect where it's not really people seriously saying that they're actually going to vote for this guy. They're just, of the choices you give them, they're like, yeah, okay, I don't like the other guy, I'll go for this one, or whatever. And when you actually get down to voting in real life, these things wash out. And you, as we get closer and closer to the election, you'll see less of and less of these sort of crazy effects in the polls. And the one thing we talked about is, you know, if Trump was running as a third party and comparing to what Perot did in 92, and I point you back to that Twitter discussion we had again, you know, the pattern you see over and over again is that when you're far out, third parties poll fairly well. But the closer you get to the election, the more people start saying, you know, I want to vote for somebody who's going to win, and I don't want to be a spoiler because I know this third party is not going to win.
Well,
but
the other thing,
it might make a difference between these other two guys. And while I don't really like either of them, I do have a preference. One of them is better than the other.
Well, the other thing that we've seen happen in the last few election cycles is that the whoever was ahead, okay, the margin of victory was a lot bigger,
right,
than the predicted polls show.
This is something I've mentioned a number of times, and the last few major polling events have all fit this pattern. Although I haven't had time to go back and research this in a rigorous way, but there has been a repeated pattern on several elections now where the one bias that's consistent in the polls is making it look closer than it really is.
That's right. That's exactly right.
It's not a bias towards one side or towards the other.
It's just a bias whoever's ahead is usually ahead by a hell of a lot more than the polls make it out to be.
Right. Okay.
So, all right, I got a subject I forgot to make a note about.
One more subject in this, this segment. Go ahead.
Yeah, Galaxy Note 5 design flaw. I don't know if you heard about this.
I have not heard about this at all.
Oh, okay, cool. So they launched the Galaxy Note 5, which is one of these devices that myself, like Steve Jobs, despise because the thing needs a stylus.
Okay.
And if any of you have ever owned a device with a stylus, I owned a few of them, like in the early 2000s. I lost styli left and right. It's ridiculous. It's annoying having to pull out the stylus. It's just fucking annoying, and it's a stupid idea. And I will reiterate, Steve Jobs agreed with me. He said, never fucking making a damn thing with a stylus. Okay. For one device I had, I used to have to buy packs of them. Well, so they launched this new S5, and then this this blog called Android Police, okay, discovered that you could permanently damage the device if you insert the S-style pen into its storage slot backwards. All right? And the thing
permanently
is
permanently damage it. Now, the functionality damage or just, it. This or just is a little like, place. That,
right.
Are you just damaging the hole you're shoving it in, or are you making it so the device doesn't work?
The device doesn't work.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Nice.
You're fucked the machine. Okay? Now, so a couple of people are saying, you know, and some people have certainly corrected, well, you know, Apple had like the bend gate and the thing. I'm like, well, wait a second. Okay, all right, look. First of all, look, the antenna gate thing was like, yeah, you maybe you dropped a call. You didn't fucking like destroy the phone by holding it wrong. Okay, all right. And here's the other problem. The previous version had it that if you try to insert the pen into the slot the wrong way, it would the thing like kind of force you back. No, you're not putting it the right way. They didn't do it with this version for whatever the fuck reason. Okay, so if you put it in backwards, it could damage it. Samsung was asked to respond, which their response was,
"Don't put it in that way."
Listen, we highly recommend our Galaxy Note 5 users follow the instructions in the user guide to ensure they do not experience such an unexpected scenario caused by reinserting the S Pen in the other way around. That was their response. Apparently, it's like I told you today with our little problem with transferring funds, RTFM, basically, at this point. Look, the Galaxy Note 5, I don't think was like super, I mean, it obviously they sold many, but it's not super popular. I think the reason why some people are saying that a bad publicity for Samsung right now, their sales have been like shit, results have been like shit. I think the last thing that they really wanted was to launch a brand new product that like, that has such a big flaw. I thought that was interesting that they,
Okay, let's take a break. We'll come back for round 4, which I think will be our last lightning round for today. 4 rounds is enough for one day, isn't it, Yvonne?
Yes.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Facebook, Facebook, Facebook!
Hey, do you want to help support Curmudgeon's Corner? Well, right now, the best way is through Facebook. If you haven't already liked us on Facebook and you actually, like us, then go search for Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook and like our page. It will help you see when we announce new episodes and it'll help us reach more new people too. If you like a particular episode, like our episode announcement post too, or share it with your friends. All of this helps spread the word about our podcast to more people who might like it as well. And of course, we love having a conversation with all of you listeners, so please use Facebook to leave comments on the shows, give us suggestions, or anything else like that. It's always great to hear from you. So, if you want to help the show, use Facebook. Or forget all of that and just send us money.
Okay, we're back. Now, our next topic... I would be remiss if we did not cover this because we got a request for this topic on our Facebook page. Do you remember what this was, Yvonne?
No.
There was an article, and again, I forget where the article was. I should look it up. About the formula used to determine the right temperature in office buildings and how it was based on, you know, a 50-year-old formula that was determined for the average white male of the time in like 1962 or something. And how this inherently biased all, you know, determinations of, you know, this basically they're saying, you know, this is why women are always cold, because they naturally run a few degrees cooler. But office buildings are set for what makes men comfortable. But it's not only what makes men comfortable. It's apparently what made the average sized man of the 1960s comfortable. And of course, we're all a bit bigger than we were in the 1960s as well.
Well, yeah. So we're bigger. So therefore, we're warmer.
Right.
Because more fat means that we run warmer.
So in any case, the bottom line here, and here I found the at least one article. This is Amber, who requested this on our Facebook page. And it's an article at NPR.org from August 5th called "New Study Says Chilly Offices Hurt Women's Productivity and Health." And basically, again, the idea is that there's this ancient formula, and you know, but fundamentally, like, how do you solve this problem? No matter what you do, like,
I've worked in a hot working environment. When I was in elementary school, okay, actually, most schools in Puerto Rico were like this. There was no air conditioning. Now, Sam has been to Puerto Rico. As you know, Puerto Rico is not a cold place. Okay, right? Not at any time of the year, period. Okay? I mean, productivity for people in the heat drops a lot. I'm going to say that...
So what you're saying is Puerto Ricans are lazy.
Yes. Actually, no. But what I'm saying is what I'm saying is that...
I was just trying to get a rise out of you.
It's a joke. So anyway, what I'm saying is that what they're saying about the cold and the hot bullshit, listen, you know what? Because it's colder, that they're affecting female productivity, my ass. Look, I'm sorry, but you can... You know, most women that I know that are in an office, they feel a little bit chilly. They bring in a little fucking jacket and they work very well. And I know quite many very productive women in the office. So I think that this is just a lot of fucking bullshit.
Well, the point is comfort, though. And if you've got a situation
I mean, you know, some people like it one way, some people like it another. I do agree.
There's also an energy issue. Like if you're air conditioning it down to 70 degrees because that's where the men are comfortable. If you put it at the temperature women are comfortable at 75, you'd be saving a lot of money, too.
I do agree that you should be, but actually, you think that they're comfortable at 75. What I'm saying is, like, right now that I know quite a lot of women that even at 75, it's too damn cold. They're looking at 80. Exactly. And I'm like, fuck, 80 is uncomfortable as all hell in an office. So I don't know.
I guess it depends on what you're wearing, like you said, too. Wear swimsuits to the office.
Go naked to the office. There you go.
I enjoy that in certain venues, but I don't think I would at the office.
An all nude office?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going for that. A beach, sure. An office, no.
It'd be kind of awkward to be sitting in a conference room with all the women naked in the conference room. Yes, I would say that.
I'm more worried about the men. But
can I be honest? There's anything wrong with that. That's not really my interest. I know where I would be looking. I'd be very, you know.
Anyway, the point though is let's even take away the gender thing. You know, each person has a different internal thermostat. If you're going to set a building at a certain temperature, you're going to make certain people uncomfortable no matter what. And so the question is, what's the right way to calibrate that? Like, should you calibrate it so that like half the people think it's too hot and half the people think it's too cold? Is that the right place to put it?
Yep.
Yeah. I think probably, but then you have to have some sort of feedback mechanism for people to tell you that and then adjust appropriately. Whereas most places, and part of the point of this article, is that the standardized formula that's used in most buildings, it simply says, you know, the average man of 1963 is comfortable at this temperature, so let's set it there.
Well, you know, I gotta be honest. I don't, they're talking about that. I've been in a lot of situations like dealing with like buildings. I don't see them being that fucking scientific.
Yeah, I've seen them all over the place too. And also,
exactly.
There's also the problem that having an actual uniform temperature over the whole building is also a problem that is not well solved in a lot of buildings. No. I mean, maybe some buildings are great at this, but others,
but most of them are not.
There's a lot of variation within the building. And if you happen to be the poor schmuck whose seat is next to an air conditioning vent, well,
you're fucked.
Or
the other guy who's sitting in the window that's get hit by the sun all day and it's fucking like sweltering in there. Hey, you know,
so
look, keeping an even temperature in a building is like fucking next year to impossible.
The only real solution to this is get rid of these goddamn open spaces, give everybody individual offices again, and give everybody their own thermostat.
There you go. That's it.
We've solved the problem. And
Problem solved!
And we've gotten rid of these horrible, horrible open spaces that like are dehumanizing as well. Give people damn offices.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, do you have more or should I go through my list? I want to bang out a couple.
I'm out.
Okay, we would be neglectful in not mentioning Biden again. So there are a couple things I mentioned. I did an additional blog post that had Clinton continuing to weaken, and there's actually a new PPP poll in New Hampshire that might be the first positive move towards Clinton in months. I'm going to process it in a few hours probably, so... But that's my guess. But in any case, the trend over the last few months has been Clinton getting weaker and weaker and weaker in the general election matchups. She's getting weaker and weaker in all the primary polls. Now she's still way, way ahead, but a lot weaker than she had been. And we talked last week that she dropped below 50%. And is this the opening for Biden or somebody else? And Biden is thinking about it this month. And he basically, if he's going to do this seriously, he needs to jump in before the next debate. There have been a few mixed messages here. A few days ago, there were leaks saying that Biden is taking it really seriously and that he's leaning towards running. There was another article today, though, that said he's not sure if he has the emotional energy to do it. And then there's been talk of whether or not Hillary is going to try to make a deal with him or whether she's talked to him. Apparently, the current word is she has not spoken to him. Could she make a deal and say, OK, Biden, come on, I'll give you Secretary of State. I know you don't want to be VP again, but I'll give you Secretary of State. Don't run against me. Yeah. So you could see that kind of deal happening.
Why would he want to be fucking Secretary of State?
He really likes that stuff. He probably would have preferred being Secretary of State to being VP, to be honest.
Maybe.
If he'd had his choice, 6 years ago. But anyway, last time around, I said maybe a 30% chance that he runs at this point. Given the conflicting rumors over the last few days, when the first set of rumors came out and it was like, oh, it looks like he's doing it. I was going to raise that 30% to 50%. But with the latest stuff, I think I'm sticking with 30%. He may run. There's a decent chance that he will, but I think there's a better chance that he doesn't. If he's going to do it, I mean, now is the time. Hillary does look weak. He had a meeting with Warren. And so, of course, there was speculation that Biden and Warren were teaming up and they were going to do Warren VP or something like that. Or they were making some sort of deal. I don't think that all of that necessarily. I think that's a lot of people speculating about nothing. But he's clearly giving this some serious thought. There have been a couple things out of the White House where the Obama team has been saying things that sound vaguely encouraging to Biden, and even speculating that you know, Obama might not stay neutral in the primary battle if Biden was running. I don't know. I think it would be fun if he ran. And here's the other thing. I meant to say this the last time we talked about this, but failed. If Biden jumps in, I still think Hillary is the odds-on favorite, but she'll be significantly weakened simply by the fact that he jumped in. Because we've talked many times here about how nobody's really excited about Hillary. You know, there are people really excited about Bernie Sanders.
Right.
I'm not sure anybody will be really excited about Biden, maybe a few people, but...
actually, I think a lot of people would be really excited about Biden.
Maybe, but...
I really do. I think a lot more people than are excited about Hillary.
I'm not sure about that, but the bottom line is, right now, Hillary and her momentum and the fact that she is... Everybody's like, oh, of course it's Hillary. Is contingent on the fact that seems invulnerable.
Would be excited about Biden
because
and the reason why I say that is because a lot of people have pointed out, I mean, Biden has been like Obama's like basically like loyal dog.
Oh, Obama likes Biden better than he likes Clinton.
Oh, a bazillion miles.
So, but I think but what I'm trying to get to here is Clinton's inevitability feeds on itself. She's inevitable because she's inevitable. She's inevitable because nobody has a shot against her. The second you get sort of serious, viable competition that people are like, oh, they're real serious candidates coming up against her, then she doesn't look so inevitable anymore, and people start shopping more than they were before. And that doesn't mean the support goes to Biden automatically. You know, Biden may end up third after Sanders. Still, but the fact that people are thinking about that means, you know, before nobody's been considering these guys like Webb and O'Malley and these guys, but maybe if Hillary looks weak enough and Biden entering the race would make her look really weak, then maybe people start looking at, they start looking at Biden, they start taking a more serious look at Sanders, they start looking at O'Malley, they start looking at Webb. Maybe other people start thinking, well, maybe I should jump in too, because she's looking weak. And it builds on itself. So if you have Biden jumping in, then this no longer, I still think Clinton wins in the end, but it no longer becomes a slam dunk. It becomes, she's going to have to fight for it.
No, I know. Well, I know one thing. If Biden jumps in, I'm far more likely to vote for him than I'm voting for Hillary, that's for sure.
There you go. Okay. My next topic. I finished a TV show.
You finished a TV show? So you finished making a TV show, or you finished watching a TV show?
Watching a TV show. And as I've mentioned before, not a single episode, but I finished, like, you know, the whole damn thing, all the seasons, all the episodes. And it
is what?
Psych. Psych ran from... 2008 to 2004, or sorry, 2007 to original release, 2006 to 2014, 8 seasons, 121 episodes. If you're not familiar with it, it's about a guy that pretends to be a psychic detective and gets, you know, they go and solve crimes every time. And he's not really a psychic, but he pretends and he fakes it. And it's sort of one of these... you know, dramedy kind of things where, you know, they're solving murders and stuff, but it's kind of comedy. Anyway, fun show. Watched all of it, finished it off this week. You know, good show. I liked it. I don't know exactly when I started the show because I started it before I was keeping track. But it took a long time. So I finished it off. It was a good show.
All right. Well, I never heard of it before.
So, well, you anyway. Should watch it. It's funny. It's funny.
Jesus, I don't have time for this shit.
Check it out. This is one of the things. Before we started recording.
All I watch lately, like I said, I watch like news in the morning a little bit. That's it. I'm not watching any shows. I don't have any more time. I don't know.
Maybe when
I get older.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I watch these things and I watch them very, very slowly. Like, you know, one episode every few weeks, you know, and eventually, you know, I get done. But anyways, enough about Psych. The next thing
Hopefully the final thing, because we're running... We're not running that bad.
It's not that bad. You've got a hurricane headed towards you.
We got a storm headed. As a matter of fact, we're doing stuff today, planning out, like, you know, what our contingency plan is right now if the storm is
This is heading over. Tropical Storm Erica.
Erica.
And a
If it gets here, it's going to get as a minor hurricane.
Right now I'm looking at the odds on the National Hurricane Center. You're just north of Miami. You've got like a 35% chance of tropical storm force winds.
Right.
And right now you're showing a less than 5% chance of actual hurricane force winds.
Right. So that's why I'm not. Now we're going to make preparations. We're going to clean up stuff. We're going to pick up everything outside. I already got I don't know, as I'm on the condo board, I was just, we were discussing that over emails today with our property manager, what actions we're going to take, so we're going to be preparing. I'm not that concerned about the storm like right now. So,
yeah. Yeah. And if it affects you, it's going to be like Sunday night or Monday, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which is going to be a problem. I'm supposed to be leaving on a business trip.
There you go. One more thing. Earlier today, there was a reporter and her producer or her cameraman were shot on live TV in Virginia. Got shot on
live TV. I know.
And by the way, the person they were interviewing was also shot, but survived.
He shot himself.
Well, no. The person they were interviewing. So there was the reporter. Oh, no,
the person they were interviewing also was shot, but they survived. And the guy that did the shooting,
he shot himself.
He
killed himself. And apparently there were some workplace grievances, and there's a racial aspect to it. He thought there was discrimination going on against him because he was black. And I don't know, maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. The right answer is not shooting people.
He did post on Twitter the video of him shooting them.
Well, the video was all over the place, and that's one of the controversies here. Is obviously it was on live, so that happened,
right?
But then it was retweeted and retweeted and retweeted. CNN was playing it once an hour. They said they decided to show it, but they would only show it once an hour. And so there was a lot of discussion of, is it appropriate to show this video of, the people getting shot and dying?
I kept saying no.
I have not watched it. I've seen some stills from it, but I have not seen the video. I have not gone after the video. And I'm one of the ones that, like, I've said before, when it comes to sort of videos of, drone attack damage and things like that, that I think we should see the gory video, because it lets us know, like, what is it that we are enabling?
I know.
But this kind of situation is different from that.
No.
Because I think that I don't think there's any purpose really served by watching the gory details of this kind of murder. If it's something that our government is doing, I kind of feel strongly that if we're really going to support our government engaging in whatever warfare it's doing, we should be able to look at it with our eyes open, see exactly what it is, and say, yes, this is still worth it. Whether it's killing soldiers or killing, we accidentally kill children with drones. I think it's important in those kind of cases that, yeah, we should see it, but I don't want to see the beheadings that ISIS does. I don't want to see these kinds of murders. I don't think it serves any purpose that's useful. And I think the right borderline is probably that, okay, maybe you do make the video available, but you don't push it out in formats where it's unavoidable. So I think CNN probably shouldn't have been playing it every hour on the news, on the station that's in all kinds of, hotel lobbies and restaurants and airports and all this kind of stuff. But should they have made it available on the website for people who wanted to see it? I'm not going to object to that. But I think pushing it out in ways that people can't avoid it. And you know, people have also talked about, you know, now you've got auto-playing videos on Facebook and Twitter. So if somebody posts it in those kinds of forums, you know, they don't even have the choice to hit play. They're just scrolling through and all of a sudden, boom, they see the person.
I know. And I just made the mistake of like scrolling through Twitter on the link of DBJ. And I just pushed it out. It's a little bit horrifying.
Yeah. I mean, I've avoided it and I'm going to try to.
I will suggest that you do because I made the mistake of doing that. That was a big
just
mistake.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't do it.
Yeah. No. And so, by the way, for those of you, for not just this kind of thing, but for all kinds of reasons, both Facebook and Twitter, you can go into the settings and turn off autoplay videos. And I did that almost.
I don't have autoplay videos on Twitter, so
actually hit play.
No. But I could see the stills.
Oh, right.
They were still disturbing. I can't imagine how the video would look.
Yeah. And of course, this is another scenario where, you know, the woman's fiance worked in the control room and saw, the guy's fiance worked in the control room and saw him kill
both.
The man she was living with was an anchor at the station.
Right.
I'm not sure he saw it live, but the man's fiance was in the control room managing the broadcast they were doing when this happened. So, you know, disturbing stuff. And it was not the only item today. There was some kind of mass shooting in, I think it was Louisiana today again. It's kind of disturbing that these things happen so often that they're kind of considered normal at this point and not particularly happy about that, but there you go. Okay. Two other really quick things and then we're done. These are both somewhat personal things. Earlier today, I found a loose dog running around the neighborhood, brought it home, put up posters, and at the end of the day, someone called and we returned their dog. It was a happy
ending. Yay! Yeah. All right.
So it was a little toy poodle kind of thing. It was really nice. It stuck with me all day. Like, wherever I went, it would follow me. And if I sat down, it would lie down at my feet. And, you know, it was kind of cool. And of course, our dog died a few months ago. And we're starting to think about, you know, are we going to get a new dog? And you know, what are we going to do? And, you know, so it was nice to have a dog in the house, even if it was just for a few hours. But it's good that we found the dog's owners who turned out, by the way, to be our neighbors who have occasionally had issues with us. And so we actually met them and talked to them when we gave the dog back. And we're sort of, you know, improving our relationship as neighbors. So that's a good
thing. There you go.
And then finally, the very last thing I have to say is there was a milestone event that happened for me yesterday, which was I was carrying my son on my shoulders up the stairs and, you know, I reached to do something or whatever. And all of a sudden, like, my back went out, like while I'm carrying him on my shoulders. And so I had,
you know, here's a question.
Yeah.
What the hell does that term mean? Your back went out?
Okay. What it meant in that case, I'm not sure I'm using it properly. So what?
I'm not questioning whether you use it properly. I'm just saying that people use that term. And honestly, I just thought, what the fuck does that mean?
So what happened to me specifically was I was carrying him on my shoulders. Everything was just fine. And then all of a sudden it was like something snapped and I had sharp, dramatic pain across my lower back, to the point where I essentially collapsed and I could not stand up anymore. I went to the floor. I mean, in a controlled way, I didn't go clunk, but like I went down, I got him off my back and I was there on the floor. And like, I had to call my wife for help because I could not stand up again.
Oh God.
You know,
so you're basically, you were like a turtle, like upside down. Basically.
Kind of. I mean, yeah. I was on my feet and knees at that point, but I could not move without extreme pain of any movement. Like I would try to stand up. I would try to, you know, just turn, you know, all anything like that caused a lot of pain. And over the course of a few minutes, it got a little bit better. She got me some ice to put on my back, put some painkillers into me. Within 2 or 3 minutes, I managed to stumble off to the living room. And it took about 90 minutes until I could, like, you know, even walk without, like, feeling a lot of pain. And now it's been like a day, 2 days later, and I can still feel it in my back. I'm now completely mobile and everything, but I can still feel it. But the milestone here is I think I'm getting to the point where my son is too heavy for me to carry him on my shoulders anymore. This was once. I'm sure I'm going to carry him again. This was not the last time I'm ever going to carry him on my shoulders, but it's getting damn close to the point where, like, even without this happening, it's gotten to the point where I can't do it for extended lengths of time anymore. I can only do it a little bit at a time, and he's growing really fast, and I bet you within 6 months, I will be able to do it in an emergency, but it's not going to be something that I'm going to be doing every day, like has been the pattern for the last almost 6 years. You know, it's going to be a rarer and rarer thing to the point where, you know, soon I'm just not going to be able to do it. He's going to be too damn big for me to carry him that way. And, you know, so it's kind of sad, you know, he's growing up, getting big.
All right. Well, mine's not that big yet. So,
yeah, you got a couple more years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Alex is about to turn 6. Manu just turned
3.
So we got 3 years on you.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it. I think we're at the end of the show. Thank you, everybody, for sticking with us for an all lightning round show. We know those are a little bit chaotic and all over the place, but I hope they're fun. They're fun for us, you know, and we end up talking about a lot of topics that we wouldn't otherwise talk about. So there you go. So as usual, I don't know if one of the breaks already told you this, but find us on Facebook. We're at Curmudgeon's Corner. We appreciate your likes. We appreciate your comments. Let us know you're listening and tell your friends about us. And there you go. So thank you for listening. Have a great week. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Yvonne.
Thank you.